One, go.
Blog Talk Radio.
That's a good ball. He's found there to Guardiola, who plays it deep. Saifi with a header. Howard gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey's denied again. And Donovan has scored. Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA. Certainly through. Oh, it's incredible. You could not write a script like this.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was the goal that sent the United States into the round of 16. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for joining us for this special preview of USA versus Ghana. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. Once again, joining me for this preview, Kartik Krishnayer, analyst on World Cup Buzz podcasts for the World Cup, and of course the head communications officer of the North American Soccer League. You know, they just won't stop talking. They just won't stop playing that highlight goal, Kartik.
Yeah, what a great call by Ian Dark. It's great to have a professional like Dark, who calls Premier League matches, calls boxing, has called a lot of international football matches in the past, has called games on ESPN in the United States in past World Cups, doing the U.S. games, giving us that classic call, that iconic moment. I have to say, Martin Tyler, I know he's a pro. I know he's a guy that a lot of people like, but I don't think he would have done as good a job with that call as Ian Dark did. So fantastic, and well done to ESPN.
And honestly, Ian Dark is one of my favorite English announcers, even though we have been talking about, you know, JP Del Camera doing these games. But, you know, it's already happened. It's been a fabulous World Cup. And like I've said before, Ian Dark is one of my favorite English announcers. But here it is, Kartik. USA, Ghana, round of 16. And obviously, Bob Bradley has shown once again, as we both agree, that his tactics, his formations have been spot on, and when he's had to make the substitutions to change things up, he's actually made perfect substitutions as well.
Yeah, his tactics have been spot on in this tournament. I think his subs, both in the Slovenia game and the Algeria game, very, very good. Obviously, Benny Feilhaber inserted into both matches, brought an air of stability and control in the midfield. Obviously, Maurice Adu had a big impact on that Slovenia match when he was brought in. I think DeMarcus Beasley potentially could have had a big impact at the end of this Algeria match, running at the Algerian defense, also being able to cover space at the back as they counterattacked, and obviously they had some pretty good build-up play. They almost scored a goal right before our goal. So very good job from Bob Bradley. You know, there are these people in this country who feel like you have to have someone who manages in the Premier League or someone who has some ties to England managing the U.S., and they want more English influence on our program, and they want all things to resemble what happens in England. England, of course, a country that hasn't been to a major final in 44 years. We were in a major final a year ago.
Exactly.
England, 44 years. Bradley has done a much better job tactically than Fabio Capello in this tournament. And Fabio Capello is the manager of England because they don't have any English managers who are good enough to coach their national team. So I think that this is a big moment for U.S. soccer. We've won a group that includes England, this team that all these Americans seem to think is some sort of big team. I mean, the thing I don't understand, Daniel, is why we continue to have Americans who are soccer fans, who say they want to grow the sport in this country, who treat England like they're Brazil. I mean, it's insulting to the Brazilians and to the quality of Brazilian football to be compared with a country as insignificant as England in the world game right now.
Because once I'm going to have to bring this up again, self and those that speak with an English accent who assume that we are nothing, that there is nothing here, and that our league is complete crap. And that's not true. It's a growing league.
It's not only that. They don't understand. I mean, so many people who take their inspiration from the English game don't even know what goes on in Germany or in Spain or in Italy or in Holland. I mean, they're really the splendid isolation of English culture and English foreign policy, which we saw in the last century, also has now manifested itself in football terms. Now, there are exceptions, obviously. And
exactly.
there are Englishmen here, expats, who give us a degree of they have helped us grow the game. But by and large, I don't even think it's Englishmen, it's English expats. I think it's Americans who watch the Premier League, assume it's the best league, assume everything should look like it, every structure should look like it. Then suddenly they watch one of these World Cup games, and some guy, they talk about Mesut Ozil from Germany being a revelation. He's not a revelation. I watched the Bundesliga. He's better than most of the players in the Premier League, and he has been better.
Yeah.
But they don't know about him because they're only watching one league.
Exactly. That's the problem. I mean, you know, here in this country, you know, aren't we blessed in this country not just to have the Fox Soccer Channel, of course, ESPN showing some premiership matches as well, but you also have Gold TV. You've got Gold TV showing the Bundesliga, showing La Liga, and unfortunately, no one wants to take a look at that.
Yep.
We are fortunate.
Yeah, we are very fortunate, and this is why we need to, as we grow our football culture, we need to take – there are things from England we can learn, and there should be an element of English influence, but there should also be Dutch influence, Austrian influence, German influence, Brazilian, Chilean, you name it, on and on and on, Mexican influence obviously also. So that's what we need, and I'm glad now that we've defeated England in a group, we finished ahead of them, that we can move on, and maybe we can close the book on this mindless debate that people continue to have this obsession with England. And My final word is, I said this before the World Cup, and I say it again now. England is not Brazil. Stop pretending they're Brazil. And let's talk about the other teams in the World Cup.
Exactly. And, of course, I can actually now tell some of my English friends that you can only beat the USA in friendlies.
Yep, two World Cup matches with the U.S. and no wins for England.
No wins for England. But let's get back to how that goal was done. Now, obviously, with the production work by FIFA, obviously, you did not see that distribution by Tim Howard, even though Ian Dark said it was a brilliant distribution. Now, watching World Cup live, I mean, you get the full field from behind the Algerian goal. What a throw! What an absolute perfect throw by Tim Howard right at Landon Donovan just before the half, just before the midfield line. I mean, unbelievable throw to start that goal.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I think it's that's how you start a counterattack. That's the kind of distribution you want from your keeper. This is something that has been a criticism of Tim Howard in the past. People have said, well, Brad Friedel's distribution and Casey Keller's distribution has been better. We saw what happened when Keller tried to stimulate a counterattack in that first 5 minutes against the Czech Republic in the 2006 World Cup. He tries to throw the ball out to Eddie Lewis, and instead it comes back the other way, and it's a goal for the Czechs, and we never really recovered from that.
Yeah.
Unlike that team, though, this team gave up a similarly early goal in the game against England, and we recovered, and obviously gave up two early goals against Slovenia, recovered, and really gave Algeria every opportunity to score an early goal against us, but we settled and ended up winning.
Now, here's my worry right now, Kardik, and I hate to say this, and I don't really want to bring this thing back up, but I'm going to have to. It's that first of the match, and it's not about what will Ghana do, it's what our guys do. And because the Steven Gerrard goal in the fourth minute, the first Slovenian goal in the 13th minute, too much room, too much space, allowing, and at the same time, ball watching, those are the three things I'm worried about playing against Ghana, because our guys have not, if you're a wrestling fan, you know, it's like watching Greg the Hammer Valentine. They need 20 minutes to just to get warmed up and get ready to go.
Yeah, and against Ghana's finishing has been very poor in this World Cup. But Ghana is the best team the U.S. has faced in this World Cup. I mean, they have the best players. The U.S. has played a weak England team, a Slovenia team that's well-organized and has a great team spirit but is limited, and then an Algeria team that was missing its best player in Megeni, a player that I think, had he been in the team, you would have seen us advance and Algeria advance, and you would have seen England out of the group stage. As it turns out, England was almost out of the group stage. So we're going to play a team, even though they don't have Michael Essien, one of the best players in the world, one of the best two-way players in the world, if not the best two-way player in the world. They are still very formidable. They just won the under-20 World Cup last year, Daniel. I know you saw that match.
Yes, I did.
Against Brazil. And Radovic, their Serbian manager, has done is he's called in more U-20 players into the full team than I think a lot of people in Ghana were comfortable with. But those guys, those young guys, 19 and 20-year-olds, have really raised their game, and they've been very impressive in this.
Definitely.
It's probably the toughest group in the World Cup getting through that one.
Exactly. Now, taking a look at their roster, obviously the penalty kick taker has been Asamoah Gyan at Rennes in the French League One. Obviously, you can't give any penalties to this Ghanaian side, even though hopefully Guccione will we'll all remember that penalty call that was against the U.S. and given the that 2-1 lead before the half back in Germany. So just obviously the speed, and hopefully they don't finish all their chances. But obviously just don't give up a penalty because, you know, then they might force extra time since there won't be a draw ending these matches.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think we're going to have to tighten up at the back because they're going to get a lot of opportunities. And we have not had that fatal red card yet that we've had in so many matches in the past. We haven't had that penalty giveaway. My fear is that that's going to happen in this game.
Yeah.
Gyan is a good player. They've just got a lot of a talent going forward, and then at the back they have a player like Ponsil, who's a great back. You know, Sulley Muntari can't even find his way into this team as a starter. That tells you how strong they are. Now, he'll play, but he'll probably come on in the 60th minute. And, you know, if they're ahead of us, he may not play. They're looking for a goal. So,
yeah.
He didn't play in the first game against Serbia. I think he may have played at the very end with them up 1-0, and they were wasting time with the sub. So
right.
This is going to be a tough game. This is a tough challenge playing a strong African team, a team that is just getting better and better, a country that's becoming more of a powerhouse in the world game, as we are. I mean, this is a great World Cup, Daniel, because this is a World Cup where we're seeing a lot of emerging football nations really assert themselves, not only ourselves and Ghana, but also Japan, Korea, and South Korea, and several others.
Exactly. Going back to the roster, obviously, for those of you that are familiar with Sulley Muntari, he plays his club football with Inter in the Serie A, and of course, as everyone knows, Serie A champions, Coppa Italia champions, and their first European Champions League title since 1950-something, I believe. It was like a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Of course, the midfield's going to be very, very dangerous. Stefan Appiah, who plays also in Italy for Bologna, and Derek Boateng for Getafe in La Liga in the midfield. So, you know, this is a dangerous side. Obviously, the finishing has not converted tons of goals. They've scored from the penalty spot. And I think the Germans, they also played that patient game till they finally got that goal from Ozil. And let's talk about who's in their brackets. I mean, obviously, we're not trying to, you know, think ahead of ourselves here. You know, Ghana is a dangerous side, ladies and gentlemen. Still, it's that quarterfinal matchup. It's either Uruguay or South Korea. And if they happen to defeat either Uruguay or South Korea, obviously Group H matches have not started yet, but so far it's either going to be the Netherlands, Slovakia, or Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, the semifinal match would probably be a bridge too far. So does that mean the Netherlands would play Brazil in the quarterfinals?
It's a possibility, depending on what goes on in Group H.
That's too bad for the tournament. I would have liked to have seen that game in semifinals or the finals. But, yeah, that's interesting, certainly. And obviously, Holland will want to get Robin healthy for that one. For us, on our side, South Korea is a team that has a lot of energy, but they have deficiencies at the back. Obviously, Park Ji-sung, Choo Young-lee, players that we're very familiar with. But I think we can beat them for certain. I would say they're the weakest of the four teams on this side. Uruguay is probably the strongest team. Now, I'm not sure if we're the second strongest or the third strongest. It's between us and Ghana for the second strongest. Uruguay with Suarez, who had the golden boot this year in Europe, 35 goals for Ajax in the Dutch league. Of course, our friends who only watch the Premier League probably never heard of the guy because they don't watch that league.
Exactly.
So they don't rate him. But Suarez, very, very efficient striker, and then Diego Forlán.
Of course. Diego Forlán has been absolutely fantastic for Atletico Madrid in La Liga.
Yeah, and then you've got a back line that's very, very well structured, and Tabárez back with Uruguay. They're going to be a tough team to beat. I mean, if I had to pick someone coming out of that end of the bracket that's going to go to the semifinals, it would be Uruguay right now, but it could very easily be either us or Ghana. If we get, the winner of the U.S.-Ghana match could certainly beat Uruguay. It'll be a tough match. I don't think Uruguay is going to have a hard time with South Korea. I could be wrong, but I just think that their back line is too solid, and then with the three attacking players they've got and South Korea's deficiencies at the back, I'm expecting the Koreans to have a lot of energy run at them, but just not have enough in the way of technical skill and defensive shutdown ability to contend with Uruguay. I mean, maybe the game will go pretty far, 0-0 or 1-1, but Uruguay will eventually beat them.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, South Korea is going to show some heart in this one, and the back line does seem to be a bit suspect. But still, I agree with you. I think we could see if we can pound some goals early on Ghana. I think we're going to have a quarterfinal matchup against Uruguay, but we'll wait and see what happens. But of course, the bottom end of the bracket: Argentina versus Mexico, Germany versus England. Those matches will be a quarterfinal setup. Paraguay taking on Japan. Of course, once again, we're waiting for Portugal's opponent.
So Germany will play the Germany England winner will play the Argentina Mexico winner, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Argentina Mexico winner was facing either the Germans or the English. And let me tell you something. Isn't it funny that with France having so much turmoil in this World Cup, that turmoil has now creeped in with the Mexican camp, and Javier Aguirre, can we say he's too sentimental to the old guard?
Yeah, I mean, I am still shocked that Perez is starting a keeper. I go to my local public store. I see a big thing, Coke ad with Memo Ochoa. I turn on the television. I see Memo Ochoa in an Allstate commercial, and yet he hasn't played a minute in this World Cup. Franco, Cuauhtemoc Blanco, they've been playing a lot of time. I think there's a lot of unhappiness that Chucharito is not featuring. But I think Aguirre may need to start Franco, who can fight and hold up the ball against the Argentines. Of course, Franco's Argentine himself, but naturalized Mexican in this match, because they could get run off the pitch. Honestly, I mean,
yeah.
It's I fear for Mexico in this game. This could be pretty bad unless Aguirre comes up with a tactical master plan. Argentina right now looking nearly unbeatable.
Exactly, and I mean, you know, Argentina is slowly looking like they could be World Cup champions if they play, you know, if Diego Maradona doesn't have an eruption on the sideline in a negative way. It's just been, I just have to say once again, Kardik, it's amazing about Diego Maradona, and obviously he is a former player, but, you know, not having a coaching mentality from retirement up till now, I would say, or up till started becoming head coach. I mean, does he have fantastic assistants giving him ideas, or is it really him?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that he's got a very he's got more of a sense of tactics than we thought he did. And the combinations he's thrown out there have been very good. It was very controversial that he omitted both Zanetti and Cambiasso, but the team seems to have come together. Mascherano has marshaled that midfield, and going forward they've been electric. And Jonas Gutierrez, those first two matches, did an okay job at right back, a better job than we thought he would. And he, of course, has just spent the last year in the championship in England. He hasn't even been playing in a top-flight league with Newcastle, who, of course, won the league and got promoted again. But He's made the right calls thus far, Maradona, and he's going to have potentially Mexico and England or Germany. Now, I think they would rather face England, who's a limited team, than face Germany. Now, Germany-Argentina will be interesting because Germany certainly has the flair players in Sami Khedira and Mesut Ozil that could break down that that kind of shaky back line that Argentina has. So that could be another interesting quarterfinal matchup, assuming Germany can get past England and Argentina can get past Mexico.
And here's the thing that's been kind of strange, and I guess maybe the Germans have learned their lesson when it comes to selecting players for their national team. And we all know the situation with Jermaine Jones, who was ready to play for the German national team. But, you know, you have certain players like Miroslav, who is Polish but
right.
became a German. You have a Brazilian, I think it's
Cacau.
Cacau, who's now German.
Mesut Ozil is obviously born in Germany, but as the name indicates, he's Turkish. And
exactly.
Sami Khedira, born in Germany, but as the name indicates, he's Tunisian.
Exactly.
And you've got Marco Marin, who I believe is Bosnian. I mean, they have just this melting pot team. Boateng, obviously, is Ghanaian, so, and his brother, Kevin Prince Boateng. That's another player we need to watch, obviously, from
exactly.
the U.S. perspective on Saturday, is Kevin Prince Boateng. But his brother, Jerome, continues to play for Germany.
Yes.
German football is changing, and I'm surprised to see how they've embraced these ethnic immigrant groups, minority groups, in a way that some other countries haven't, Spain and Italy in particular. And they're in a transitional phase, but I think Germany's going to come out of this transition much better with more flair. It's not just the old German anti-football with big, strong guys that would play very mechanically. There's a kind of joy to watching Germany now, and this is something that I think England's going to discover on Saturday. They're thinking they're coming up against the old German team. They're going to be pretty surprised when they watch Ozil play and dribble around them.
They will be sadly mistaken because, you know, you can't assume this is the same German side. And I think Joachim Löw, I believe he's adapted these players very, very well with each other. Yep. And I believe he's showing, let's just say it, I think it's a brand new Germany that you can bring in players that are not, you know, the family is not from the mother, you know, is not from Deutschland, and, you know, they can just come in and do a job.
And they've embraced it. And they've embraced it. Unlike Italy, you know, the thought of Balotelli being on the national team in Italy has gotten all these racist groups, these nationalist groups out saying, no way, don't pollute our Italy. And I think that Giuseppe Rossi has suffered from some of that.
Exactly.
Because he was born in the U.S., I don't think he realized it was going to be this way. But also, he's played in Spain, so he's got the situation where he's not very Italian to them.
And exactly.
Germany used to have some of those issues. They still have small contingents of pockets of people that are that way. But it seems like they've evolved. They've realized, you know, we got this great Brazilian player who's naturalized, Cacau. Let's take him. We got this great player of Turkish ancestry who can change the way we play. Let's take him. I don't think Italy's mature enough yet to do that. Maybe
no.
They need to get mature enough to do it because this World Cup has been an embarrassment for them.
It has been. And who would have thought, honestly, Slovakia, who would have thought that, you know, being a member, you know, would just come out and put two goals past them. Italy would pull one back. And then late in the match, it's 3-1. It's a consolation at 3-2, and that's it. Who would have thought?
Yeah. And New Zealand getting a draw against – I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, New Zealand has really benefited from what's gone on here in the U.S. Obviously, they've got Jeremy Christie, who plays in our league in the NASL. They've had a player who used to be in USL. They've got several players who used to be in MLS. They have Boyens, who didn't play a minute, unfortunately. Christie did play a significant role for New Zealand. Boyens didn't play from the Red Bulls, but he was on the team. But this is a team whose collective value is about $350,000, as opposed to the Italian team worth millions and millions of euros, dollars, pounds, whatever monetary denomination you want to use. And they drew them, and they should have beaten them if it hadn't been for a dive in the box by De Rossi. So, and then they play Slovakia, who's a good team. We saw Slovakia really take it to the U.S. in a friendly, but still, I mean, with everything on the line, Slovakia in their first ever World Cup, Italy, the defending world champions. I mean, you would think Italy would get the result they need in that situation, and instead they got. I mean, the score line was misleading, 3-2. They really got torn apart. Slovakia
exactly.
really dominated this game.
And just to go back to New Zealand real quick, just taking a look at their squad list, the only player with no club affiliation was their midfielder, Dave Mulligan. And amazingly, you got Motherwell for Michael McGlinchey from Motherwell in Scotland. I mean, you know, Middlesbrough, Chris Killen. I mean, you know, you got some players here. Oh, and Simon Elliott, with no club affiliation, is also, you know, former Columbus Crew, Los Angeles Galaxy player.
Right.
Yeah, that's amazing. Ryan Nelson,
yeah.
Blackburn Rovers.
Yep. Formerly of DC United, but you've got obviously Jeremy Christie of Tampa and Boyens from the Red Bulls. But you don't,
yep.
you don't have a whole. You don't, these aren't exactly glamorous clubs, and they were able to basically beat Italy. And then you had this Paraguay team, which is very good.
Oh yes.
Really take it to Italy in the first half of that game. I mean, Italy is just they've got issues. I think we're seeing that Lippi may have stuck with the old guard for well too long. And,
probably.
They finished last in that group, actually. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we're hearing about the significance of France and Italy, both defending the two teams that were in the World Cup final in 2006, not advancing. First time ever this has happened in the following World Cup. What's even more significant is that they both finished last in their group.
Huh,
now, that's
I
not
know.
Being talked about as much. It's not as if one of them just barely missed qualifying.
No.
I mean, they both finished last in their group. So that's in the case of France, this was predicted by many of us after their farcical qualification, you know, denying Ireland on a handball. But that's also because of Roman Dominic. I think Thierry Henry feels relieved that he didn't have to wear the armband because he wasn't playing, and it was Evra that had to deal with this. But for Italy, it's a completely different situation because Dominic is reviled in France, whereas Lippi is revered in Italy, and Lippi also was revered by his players. So the
yeah.
France situation was predictable, and I don't think it's that big a deal that Laurent Blanc will come in now, take over France, and they'll be back to the old France. But in Italy's case, there's something endemic, there's something systematically wrong with their football, and
yeah.
They got to fix it.
Well, unfortunately, you know, the Italians have been notoriously known to be too defensive when it comes to the World Cup, and not a lot of offense. But you know what? With the France situation, was it more that the players did not want to be coached by Dominic, or were they very embarrassed that they qualified for the World Cup in that fashion?
I've heard both. I mean, in fact, I've heard I talked to a French journalist the other day who told me it was a combination of both, that it was in the back of their minds that they really shouldn't be there. And then they get there, and they're like, you know, we really feel bad for Ireland, some of the players. And then it's like they're in prison because Dominic is the manager. So the two elements put together were like a fire and gasoline. And that's so it was a combination of both from the one French journalist I spoke to about this.
Wow. Yeah, because I had a funny feeling. It wasn't just Dominic. I had a funny feeling it was that handball by Henri
yeah.
that really, really said they. I mean, they all watched the replay. They saw what happened. They know what happened. That was my feeling, that it wasn't just Dominic, that it was the way that they qualified. But hopefully
yeah.
for Ireland, we'll see what happens. I believe it's going to be the end of December of next year for their World Cup qualifying group draws for Europe. So we'll see what
yeah,
happens.
Yeah, and we'll see what the seedings are like after this. This will obviously be done right at the time when right at the end of the Euro qualifying. It'll be in November or December of 2011, just like it was, I believe, in November of 2007 last time. So we'll see Italy's draw. And you begin to think in your mind there's a possibility that Italy could miss a World Cup qualifying. And let's see how they do in Euro qualifying. I'm not sure who they're playing in Euro qualifying. I'm not sure what group they're in. But qualifying for the Euros is very difficult. And
Definitely. We've seen it many, many times. That European Cup Championship is a very, very difficult thing.
They don't protect the teams in Euro qualifying in the draw the way they do in World Cup qualifying in the draw in Europe. So, you know, in fact, I'm going to look it up now to see who Italy is drawn in with. And it'll also be interesting to see who France is drawn in with. And I know England's been drawn in with Switzerland, which is not really a an easy draw. Look at the job that Ottmar Hitzfeld, who was a great coach for Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund in the past, won the Champions League in both places, has done with Switzerland, taking over the Swiss national team.
Yes, exactly. Well, Carter, quickly, it's prediction time. USA, Ghana, is this going to be done in regulation, extra time, or are we going to see round of penalties?
I think we're going to see this game go 120 minutes. And my fear is, and I guess I'll make the prediction, I hope I'm wrong, and I'm still prefacing it saying I hope I'm wrong. I'm thinking Ghana gets a 2-1 result.
Wow. That's, hey, listen, look, they could be horror show again if that does happen, but I have a good feeling it's going to be 2-1 USA and will benefit our first penalty in the World Cup. Thank you for joining me today, Kardik.
Yep, thank you, and look forward to doing it again sometime next week.
Exactly. Enjoy your football, everyone.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.